Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Congress is facing one of its biggest decisions in decades. On the table, a $700 billion bailout of Wall Street. Huge money for banks in trouble. Huge new powers for the Treasury Department and executive branch. And huge fears over what may happen next. Party lines are scrambled. Politicians are all over the map. It's a wild and massively consequential debate with world financial markets in the balance. This hour On Point, we'll talk with big players and big thinkers in the bailout battle. You can join the conversation. Should Congress pull the trigger or hit the brakes? For what? What is at stake here? We will hear in this hour from former Speaker of the House, Republican Newt Gingrich, from Vermont's independent Senator Bernie Sanders, from former Reagan and Bush One official Bruce Bartlett, and from House Financial Services Chairman, Democratic Congressman Barney Frank. Joining me first from Washington is Greg Ipp, U.S. Economics Editor for The Economist magazine. He's covering the negotiations and hearings on Capitol Hill. Greg, thanks for being with us.
Hello, Tom.
We've been talking with you about the economy for a long time. Have you ever seen a moment anything like this, Greg?
Tom, I don't think any of us have ever seen 10 days like we've just been through, and Lord help us, I hope we never see another 10 days like it.
What do you expect from these early days of the debate over the next 10 days? Is it clear that there's going to be a bailout roughly along the lines that Hank Paulson, Treasury Secretary, has requested?
Tom, I do expect something to happen, but it is not at all clear, and it is not at all a done deal. Essentially, I think Henry Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, and Ben Bernanke, the Fed Chairman, have persuaded Congress that something needs to be done. But exactly how that is done is a very, very contentious. And Congress, neither Democrats nor Republicans, had any affection whatsoever for the initial three-page plan that Paulson sent them. It came across as very high-handed. It sounded like a little bit like what the administration was accused of doing in the wake of 9/11, using the pretext of a national emergency to essentially gather enormous executive power to itself. So the Democrats and the Republicans in Congress have countered with a few conditions that they would like to see. They would like an oversight board of some kind over this $700 billion program. They would like the government to negotiate to get equity stakes in companies that benefit from it. They would like some effort made by the government to modify the mortgages that it ends up owning so that homeowners who have these troubled mortgages can stay in their homes. And finally, they would like some kind of caps put on the compensation of the executives of the companies who benefit from this program on the view that they got us into this mess and they ought to pay a price. And from what I can tell, Tom, there's been significant movement on the administration's part towards all these positions, but it's still not a done deal that they will completely bridge the gap by the, in some sense, artificial deadline of the end of this week, which is when the House of Representatives is supposed to go into recess. And there's significant resistance, especially among grassroots Republicans, to this plan. They simply do not want to go to their districts and campaign having voted for $700 billion for, so-called fat cats on Wall Street.
But it's a Republican president, and yesterday on Capitol Hill, Republican Vice President Dick Cheney and Republican Treasury Secretary who's asking, begging, pleading, urging them to do exactly that, to pass this bailout.
Well, it was interesting, Tom. George Bush has never made much of a secret of his low regard for Wall Street, and yet when Paulson explained to him what he thought the consequences of not acting would be, which is to say a far more severe credit crunch and recession for the economy, Bush said, do what you have to do and I'll worry about the politics. And when he went before the press on Saturday, he basically said, look, I'm a markets guy, but I am told by people who know markets better than I do that we need to act. And this is a very difficult situation. Paulson on Capitol Hill said repeatedly, he hates being in this position, and the taxpayer has a right to feel angry and ripped off, but they need to appreciate, at least in Paulson's view, that the alternative would be far worse in terms of economic contraction and lost jobs.
Let's look at oversight for just a second. In this initial three-page plan to roll out this the biggest bailout ever in history, it said decisions by the secretary pursuant to the authority of this act are non-reviewable. In other words, nobody can review them, and committed to agency discretion. Nobody can, I guess, even know about them, and may not be reviewed by any court of law or any administrative agency. Has that been dropped? Do you know?
From what we've heard, Paulson, at least in testimony, has said that he was very flexible on that, and even went as far as to say that it was unfair to say that the administration had laid that down as some kind of non-negotiable condition, because he said that's the sort of thing we want to negotiate with Congress. I know that there are people on the Hill who weren't buying that, but the relevant point here is that they are willing to bend on that, and I'm pretty confident that if we get a bill, it will have some kind of oversight mechanism, perhaps mimicking what we had for the Resolution Trust Corp in the early 1990s. If you recall, they had a five-member oversight board, which was made up of the Treasury and Housing and Urban Development Secretaries, the Federal Reserve Chairman, and then two at-large members. What the Democrats proposed earlier this week was that they have a five-member board made up of the Fed Chairman, the Chairman of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the Treasury Secretary, and then two at-large members, one appointed by the Dems and one by the Republicans.
Greg, how long do you think the markets will wait? Last week, they were sliding down in a big hurry. A complete collapse didn't seem beyond imagination. They've steadied a bit, but will the markets wait 2 days, 3 days, a week, a month?
I think they will, but the markets, remember, have a lot of information to absorb right now. It's not just the fate of the $700 billion plan, but a lot of other stuff that's going on. One of the hopes has been that patient long-term capital would come out of the woodworks and spy bargains here and obviate the need for the government to step in. And there might be people who say that the fact that Warren Buffett just announced he's going to put $5 billion into Goldman Sachs is exactly the kind of evidence that we want to see of the private sector resolving this on their own. And meanwhile, the Federal Reserve is basically pumping money like mad into the money markets to keep banks lending to each other and to keep overnight interest rates from skyrocketing. So that will do some good, and I think will be of some comfort to the markets.
While the markets wait. Greg Ipp, U.S. Economics Editor for The Economist magazine, thanks very much for joining us from Washington.
Sure thing, Tom.
We will hear a lot of perspectives in this hour. Joining me now from Washington to get us started, former House Speaker Republican Newt Gingrich. He's a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. His new book is Drill Here, Drill Now, Pay Less, a handbook for slashing gas prices and solving our energy crisis. It came out yesterday. Newt Gingrich, welcome back to On Point.
Well, we're glad to be with you.
You're quoted here calling the Paulson bailout plan stupid, a really bad idea, the kind of corrupt scheme that could have been designed by Vladimir Putin. I guess you don't like it.
Well, let's start with why I made the Putin reference. When you look at his initial proposal, it was to give the Secretary of the Treasury $700 billion of taxpayers' money with no congressional oversight and no judicial review. Now, that would put $700 billion so outside the rule of law that other than Russia, I don't know of any country in the world that thinks of itself as a modern country that would even contemplate that kind of thing. And I can't imagine why Secretary Paulson would have sent it up. As to practicalities, Chairman Bernanke had testified yesterday that they intend to buy the assets at above market value in order to bail out these companies. And my question would be, if you give somebody $700 billion and you say, why don't you go buy things for whatever you personally or your advisors judge them to be, you're creating a crony capitalism that is inherently corrupt. I mean, you can't imagine how much maneuvering and lobbying and effort there will be to say, buy mine, and mine is only worth $1 million in the market, but, you know, I think it's worth $5 million.
Newt Gingrich, what did you hear from Republicans coming out of their meeting with Vice President Dick Cheney yesterday? Did he persuade them?
It was completely unconvincing.
Is this going to pass? Do you think it should pass?
I think it's over, and I think they need to design a second plan. I actually think by the end of today, we will be in the business of designing a second solution, and I think the second solution is actually bigger and more comprehensive. It's essentially three boxes. One box is economic growth, because if you don't get economic growth, you'll never mop up the bad debt. A second box is energy solutions to bring at least $500 billion a year back home that we're currently sending overseas, and that's why I wrote Drill Here, Drill Now, Pay Less, and We also created a new movie that comes out Saturday called We Have the Power. And then box three is a workout, but not a bailout. I think the government can provide liquidity on a treasury cost of money plus 1 or 2%, and allow companies that want to borrow to avoid the liquidity crisis. The government can also set aside the mark-to-market accounting principle, which has been a primary engine of bankruptcy, and the government can solve these things. But I think there are no circumstances where the taxpayer should end up buying bad properties to bring them into the government to have a bureaucracy running them.
John McCain has not been clear about whether or not he'll vote for the bailout package being worked out in Washington right now. Will he? Should he?
Well, I mean, if he is a genuine reformer, if he's a genuine defender of the taxpayer, he would have to vote no. And I think one of the reasons you've seen McCain slide in the polls in the last week is that he hasn't been clear. People want leaders who stand up in a moment of crisis and say, these are my principles, this is what needs to be done, therefore this is how I would act, because it gives you a sense of certainty. And based on everything in McCain's career, he should have been an easy, clear no vote on this from day one, because this is a $700 billion power grab by the Treasury in a way that would be fundamentally antithetical to any kind of free market and any kind of rule of law.
Are you afraid that while you and others criticize this plan, the world economy, financial structure may collapse?
No. I think that if the federal government wants to avoid collapse, the first thing they need to do is suspend the market-to-market accounting rule, which is artificially bankrupting companies. I think that they should, there's a lot of other steps they can take. I've been talking with bankers, now the people on Wall Street would love this plan because they want the $700 billion. If you call somebody on Wall Street who's already got his hand out and wants the money, he's going to give you 23 reasons to give him the money. But I've been talking with people at regional banks and people outside of New York, and there is very little appetite for this. I spent 3 days in Silicon Valley, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and the venture capitalists out there want Sarbanes-Oxley repealed. They'd like to see zero capital.
There's
gain.
A long list. We're out of time. Newt Gingrich's new book is Drill Here, Drill Now, Pay Less. Newt Gingrich, thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking about the bailout battle on Capitol Hill. Giant stakes, clock ticking, everything on the line. And when it's over, we need a plan here. Everybody seems to agree, but what? We're talking with big players, big thinkers in the thick of the action. We just heard from former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. You heard his view. We'll hear in just a moment from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and from Bruce Bartlett, who was big in Reagan and Bush 1 administrations. Let's hear just a little bit of what was flying in Washington yesterday. Here's Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson admitting that what he was asking for was not an attractive option.
I share the outrage that people have. It's embarrassing to look at this, and I think it's embarrassing for the United States of America. There's a lot of blame to go around.
And a lot of warnings to go around from Paulson, Bernanke, and more. Connecticut Senator Chris Dodd, chairs the Senate Banking Committee, said yesterday that everything is on the line with this plan.
We need to move carefully and prudently and to make sure that what we do is right. I understand speed is important, but I'm far more interested in whether or not we get this right. There is no second act to this. There is no alternative idea out there with resources available if this does not work.
No second act. It has to work, said Treasury Secretary Paulson. And here's Kentucky Senator Jim Bunning, a leading GOP critic of the plan, railing against the bailout.
This massive bailout is not a solution. It is a financial socialism, and it's un-American.
Financial socialism and un-American, says the Kentucky senator. With us right now from Washington, D.C., is Senator Bernie Sanders, independent senator from Vermont, self-described independent democratic socialist. Senator Sanders, thanks very much for being here.
Good to be with you.
And with us from Great Falls, Virginia, Bruce Bartlett, former deputy assistant treasury secretary under George H.W. Bush from 88 to 93. Bruce Bartlett, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Senator Sanders, first to you, what do you see in this bailout bill?
Well, for a start, I think the hypocrisy coming from the White House is literally beyond belief. You have perhaps the most incompetent and dishonest administration in modern American history. And what they're saying is, no, the federal government should not play a role in providing health care to our children. We can't afford to do that. Federal government shouldn't be providing funds to make sure that people don't freeze to death or that middle-class families can send their kids to college. We can't afford to do that. Oh, but by the way, because Wall Street through the excessive greed and the deregulation pushed by the Bush administration has now brought our economy to the verge of the collapse. Oh, yes, the federal government has got to put $700 billion into bailing them out. We've got to give the Secretary of Treasury unlimited power with no oversight, with no transparency to do anything he wants. This, to me, smacks of absolute hypocrisy. The second point that I would like to make is what we should do is complicated. Honest people may disagree. But this is one principle that people should not disagree on. Since Bush has been president, the middle class has been in a state of rapid decline. People are working longer hours. They're earning lower wages. 5 million Americans have slipped out of the middle class and into poverty. Meanwhile, the top 1% have made out like bandits. The wealthiest 400 individuals in this country since Bush has been president have seen their wealth increase by $670 billion. That's with a B. $670 billion. So the first point that should be made is that it should not be the middle class who has suffered under Bush's reckless economic policies bailing out Wall Street. It should be upper-income people who have to pay for that bailout if a bailout is necessary.
So would you vote to push through a bailout? And if not, as proposed, then what, Senator?
Well, what I am saying to you, if there is any bailout, I will not vote for one if it's based on the backs of the middle class, if it's simply dumped into the national debt, taking our national debt over $11 trillion. So if there is to be a bailout, it has to be paid by those people who have benefited from Bush's policies, not those people who have been hurt by Bush's policies. Second of all, we obviously need to know why we got into this crisis, and that is many of these deregulatory efforts pushed by people like Newt Gingrich. I should tell you, I was in the House during the 1990s, Graham, Blyly, Leach legislation, doing away with Glass-Steagall, and many other pieces of legislation. And third major principle here is we have to deal with this issue of too big to fail. In my view, if an institution is too big to fail, it's too big to exist, and we've got to start breaking up these very, very large institutions, or else you're going to be looking at Bank of America having to be bailed out in years to come.
You've called this socialism for the rich and free enterprise for the poor, but the warnings about what may happen if something isn't done have been so dire from Hank Paulson, from Ben Bernanke.
And I understand that, and I'm honestly not dismissing that.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to understand that, and I'm on the Budget Committee. We had Mr. Paulson before our committee a year or so ago, and I asked him. I said, hey, the economy doesn't look too good to me. He said, and I quote, the economy is marvelous. Marvelous. 2 months ago, you had the Bush administration, President Bush, himself saying the fundamentals of the economy are strong. Now, the difficulty that we're having is they may be right. We may be in a dire circumstance. On the other hand, given their record of incompetence, they may not be right. And the other point that we have to deal with, and I don't mean to be negative on Mr. Paulson. I think he's a sincere guy. He's an intelligent guy. He's working hard. He's trying his best. But do you know what Paulson's job was before he became Secretary of the Treasury?
Yeah. Sure.
We have to admit this. This is a guy who had himself recently a $39 million bonus, $38 million bonus in 2005. He was the CEO of Goldman Sachs.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people who, in fact, benefited from this deregulatory climate. These are the guys who are into greed, into excess, who are part of the problem. Do you really want to give those people the key to the bank here and say, you guys solved the problem that you caused?
But, Senator, what about Democrats who protected Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac from more scrutiny and regulation themselves for such a long time?
Go further than that. I'm an independent.
Mm-hmm.
And you can – Bill Clinton signed the Graham Leach Bliley bill.
Mm.
Larry Summers was there as a cheerleader from that, as Secretary of the Treasury. So I think you can give blame to some Democrats here. But by and large, this whole deregulatory effort came from people like former Senator Phil Graham. I think we know that. John McCain, for years and years, has been telling us how important deregulation is. This is all part of that very conservative ideology, which has get government off of the backs of businesses, and they're going to create prosperity. And that deals not just with financial services, it deals with oil futures market. You saw how the price of oil soared the other day. Nothing to do with supply and demand. It has to do with unfettered free trade. It has to do with tax breaks for billionaires. That is their ideology, and I think we've got to understand that ideology has not worked.
Bruce Bartlett, you worked with the first George H.W. Bush administration. You worked in the Reagan administration. Do you think that the country's leaders right now are squaring with the American people about what's going on in this financial crisis and the implications of this bailout bill?
Well, not entirely, but in a different way than Senator Sanders thinks. I think the problems are much deeper, and I think the administration has been afraid to show to say just how dire the situation is for fear of making it worse, because the whole financial system depends on confidence. The nature of banking is that it's a house of cards that can collapse at any time, and we're now facing systemic risk. And the alternative is, frankly, 1929. And I don't think we want to go through another Great Depression just to make a point about the incompetence of this administration or some past mistakes that were made. I think something has to be done right away, whether it's – I have no problem personally with the conditions that Greg Ipp talked about, and I suspect they will be acceptable. But I think what's not acceptable is for Congress to adjourn for the election and leave all this hanging. Something has to be done. And if it's not the administration's plan, then put another plan on the table. But whatever that plan is, it's going to cost hundreds of billions of dollars, and it's going to have to be paid for by the taxpayer.
You've written in recent days in the Washington Post that you said if the events of recent days prove anything, it is that we cannot believe a word that John McCain or Barack Obama has said about what he will do as president.
Well, that's true. The plans that they have on the table, the economic plans, were for the most part designed to help them get the nominations of their parties, and they were formulated in a completely different economic, financial, and political circumstances. And I think that they have a responsibility to the taxpayer, to the voters, to tell us what they will actually do as president, and not this pie-in-the-sky stuff where we're going to spend a lot of money that we're clearly not going to be able to spend and give away a lot of tax cuts that we're clearly not going to be able to give away. And I think that they should be able to get the American people to give them a mandate for whatever it is they want to propose. And if they want to propose something like what Senator Sanders wants to do, then fine, let's say it. Let's soak the rich and make them pay. If that's what Obama wants to say, let them say it and let the American people vote.
We've got a lot of voters, citizens with questions. Teresa in Natick, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Yes, of course the American people will vote in a month based on a mandate. But my question specifically is, average Americans get up every day and go to work and pay their bills. What are the specific plans for this ballot to make the financial conservative executives responsible for the decisions that they made that have allowed this country to face this crisis that now the taxpayer is going to have to agree that this is a public-private partnership now to save our economy and the global economy? Where are the specific proposals to make the executive privilege issue to become clear about responsibility? Thank you.
Let's put that question right to the chairman of the Financial Services Committee in the House of Representatives, Congressman Barney Frank, joins us from Washington, D.C. Congressman Frank, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
We saw the three pages that came out. We've heard the thunder out of Washington for the last couple of days. Where is this headed? Are you hammering something out that will not only address the crisis but may assuage some of the concerns, like you just heard there from Teresa, saying let's make executives who are in these banks on Wall Street responsible? Where's it headed, Congressman?
Well, first of all, the proposal from Treasury has already been substantially disregarded in many respects. The central notion that and we should be clear why we got here. The lack of sensible regulation allowed the private sector to make so many irresponsible decisions, from the initial granting of subprime loans by unregulated entities to the securitization of them and the multiplication and high leveraging of them, to the point where the whole country is threatened. And unfortunately, the victims of this wouldn't just be people on Wall Street, but people trying to buy or sell cars, people trying to buy or sell furniture. They put the whole credit system at risk. So I think we have to do something. But this proposal that there be judicial review, of course we're not going to accept that. We've already written in to their proposal judicial review. We will create an independent oversight board to which every single transaction, literally every single transaction, will have to be reported and immediately made public. So there will be complete openness about what kind of prices they're paying and who they're buying from. We are going to direct that as they buy, they take into account the problem of the foreclosure crisis, which is hurting so many areas, the problem in Boston and elsewhere, and use the government's authority as we acquire some of these assets to write down principal so we get fewer foreclosures. We're going to insist that if they buy shares in a company, that in addition to the payment any shareholder would get, we would get special warrants so that we would have a particular participation in profit. Finally, we are going to put in there strict restrictions on executive compensation for those that participate. Now, as far as holding people accountable, you can't do that by legislation. This is a separation of powers issue. We don't want to, you know, the Congress doesn't legislate you're guilty or you're not guilty. But we are disappointed that there hasn't been more activity from the Justice Department or some of the regulatory agencies. And, yes, we will be hoping that they'll do that. Frankly, my own view is it's going to take a change in administrations before you get law enforcement people that will carry that out.
What kind of cap on compensation on Wall Street?
Well,
that's going to be
very... Well, we're not talking about a dollar cap. We're talking about the following things. First of all, something the House already passed this year, which is called, and it's very much advocated by various shareholder groups, say on pay. That is the whole compensation scheme, retirement, bonuses, salary, et cetera, for the top three executives have to be voted on by the shareholders because we believe the boards of directors and the CEOs are very often collusive with each other, and we want the shareholders involved in this. Secondly, if your company is benefiting from this, during that period, while you've got federal funds there, no golden parachute, zero, none. Somebody walks out the door, he or she walks out by himself. Next, there's a perverse incentive in a lot of compensation plans. If the CEO takes a risk and it pays off, the CEO makes an extra bonus. If it doesn't pay off, the CEO doesn't get penalized. That encourages them. That's not just a dollar thing. That encourages more risk-taking than there should be. And we would say they have to adopt rules that ban that. And finally, if you have one of these deals where you do get extra compensation if you hit a certain target, and then it turns out that you hit the target inaccurately or falsely, you have to give the money back.
Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont is with us. He's proposing a 10% surtax on incomes over $1 million for couples to raise, you know, hundreds of billions to help pay for this bailout. Who should pay for it? How?
Oh, I agree with that. In fact, I said that myself on Face the Nation on Sunday. The problem I have just a sort of a technical problem. That's not within the jurisdiction of the committee I'm in charge of. But many of us, and we had a House Democratic Caucus yesterday, many people said there should be some revenue source to offset the ultimate cost, because the ultimate cost isn't going to be $700 billion because we are going to recover assets, but there will be a cost. No one can know exactly how much. We might get lucky and it'd be very little, but we can't be sure of that. So I personally agree with that. Look, the House passed a bill already this year to increase the taxes on hedge fund managers where they are getting a capital gains tax that they don't really deserve because it's not their own money we're talking about. They're really getting a capital gains tax for payment for services. So I'm very much in favor of that. Until now, there's been real resistance, but maybe as the price of this, we can get it.
And Congressman, we've just got a minute here, but what about the Democrats' responsibility here in protecting Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac for so many years from more regulation?
Totally
your own responsibility.
Excuse me, totally inaccurate. For many years, the Republicans were in power. The Republicans controlled Congress from 1995 to 2006. They didn't move a bill, and they had the power to, particularly in the House. They got major tax cuts through. They got the Patriot Act through. They got the war on Iraq through, all the things I opposed. So when they really wanted to do something, they could do it. They never moved a bill. The Democrats got into power in January of 2007. Within 4 months, the committee I chair had brought a bill that passed the House that increased the regulation of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to the level everybody wanted.
Is Congress going to pass a bailout bill?
Excuse me, may I finish the answer?
Yes.
You raise an accusatory thing, legitimately.
I thought we heard you there. Okay.
So we then, in January of this year, asked the administration to put the new regulations into the stimulus. They refused for other reasons. Finally, the Senate did pass it in July. Now, we did have one difference with them at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and Bernie Sanders was the leader in urging that we create something called the Affordable Housing Trust Fund to provide a steady source of income to build affordable housing.
15 seconds, Barney Frank. Is this bailout going to pass?
Well, can I, again,
Well, I'm up against the clock. Will you stick with us?
I can't. I got to go to a meeting. But if they are willing to accept the kind of safeguards we want that protect the taxpayers some and provide some other important benefits, and if they were willing to accept an economic stimulus that deal with the unemployment compensation, then I think it probably will.
Looks like a chance big ifs. Barney Frank, Congressman of Massachusetts, thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the bailout battle on Capitol Hill. Giant stakes, clock ticking, everything on the line. And when it's over, everyone's looking for some kind of plan here. We've been joined by Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, independent senator from the state of Vermont, elected in 2006 after 16 years in the U.S. House. He's the longest-serving independent member of Congress in history. Joining us from Great Falls, Virginia, Bruce Bartlett, former Deputy Assistant Treasury Secretary under George H.W. Bush from 88 to 93, former Senior Policy Analyst in the White House Office of Policy Development under President Ronald Reagan, author of Wrong on Race. Let's go to Clint in Salt Lake City. Clint, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
Very well. What do you see, Clint?
Well, I have a couple comments. First is, I think it's really ironic that we're all looking to the people that really created this mess to get us out of it. You know, it's a lack of sound money. It doesn't really matter what they do, as long as there's artificially low interest rates, as long as they're tinkering with the system left and right, it really doesn't matter what they do.
You're saying the Fed made the problem and the Fed is now helping lead the charge to get out of it? Is that your complaint?
Yeah, that's the first item. And then the second item, I think that we can all see that bailouts beget more bailouts. We've seen it in recent past couple weeks. And what I'm afraid of, what I've heard a lot of Democrats pushing for, hey, let's help the homeowners, and I'm all for that. But if you tell one guy, hey, we'll pay your bill, it doesn't matter, his next-door neighbor that maybe is in the same predicament will say, hey, you know, if I miss a couple of house payments, government's going to help me out. So that's all I have. Thanks.
Clint, let us pick it up. Senator Sanders, how about it? Where does it end, in a way, Clint is asking? Bailouts beget bailouts, and if you start getting down to every other house on the street? I mean, how far can, should a proper bailout go here?
Well, it just seems to me, Tom, that this is a moment where we might want to rethink the role of government in our lives. And I don't agree with Clinton. I certainly don't agree with Newt Gingrich. I think that overall government has a very important role to play in our lives. And as I mentioned earlier, I find it so ironic that the Bush administration now wants $700 billion, while they have resisted efforts to end the disgrace of us having the highest rate of childhood poverty of any country on earth. Millions of working families today can't find affordable child care. We have 46 million Americans without any health care. We're the only major country on earth without a national health care program guaranteeing health care to all, et cetera, et cetera. So I think if there is a lesson to be learned from this, is that government does have a proper role to play, not just in simply protecting the wealthy and the powerful and bailing out Wall Street after their excessive greed, but to make sure that we maintain a strong middle class and we deal with the great inequality that we now have in wealth and income in this country.
Bruce Bartlett, you were in the middle of the Reagan administration's economic policy, the first Bush, George H.W. Bush's administration. How about Senator Sanders' view that there is, in this whole crisis, a kind of proof positive that there is a proper government role to play? What do you think about the philosophy that's been steering, guiding American economic oversight for the last 20 years, maybe back to your Reagan administration? Does it need some adjusting or not?
Well, as you and Senator Sanders may or may not know, I wrote a book 3 years ago called Imposter, How George W. Bush Bankrupted America and Betrayed the Reagan Legacy. So he and I probably agree on the gross incompetence of this administration. On the other hand, I think he's overstating the extent to which free market ideas are responsible. I think one can make an argument that the real problem is we didn't have enough of a free market, and we had too much of a controlled situation where things like mark-to-market rules were imposed upon the market, and you had Sarbanes-Oxley and a lot of these other things.
Could you define mark-to-market rules? I'm not sure everybody will know what you're talking about there.
Well, there's a group called the Financial Accounting Standards Board, which decides what accounting rules apply to various financial transactions, and they imposed a rule about a year ago, I think, that said that if you're holding an asset that has, if you're a financial institution, you're holding an asset that has declined in value, you must mark it down to its current value,
mm-hmm.
even though if you hold that asset, take a good example is a mortgage. If you're holding a mortgage, eventually that mortgage is going to get paid off. But right at the moment, if you had to sell it today, you might have to sell it for substantially less than its face value.
Right.
And this is the situation that has created the problems for these financial institutions. Even if they plan to hold these assets till maturity, they have to take an immediate loss on their books. And this is what has created this massive gridlock in financial markets where they cannot sell these assets, there's no price for them, and they're being forced, as Chairman Bernanke was trying to explain yesterday, forced to either sell or mark these prices down to fire sale prices that everybody knows is way too low, far below fundamental values.
But no one's really arguing that there's not a lot of ugly junk in these piles of assets. I mean, the subprime lending got so out of hand, everybody heard on the radio, you know, you don't have to even prove your income. We don't have to have any information. Just apply for the loan.
That's absolutely true. But the problem is that they're being marked down too much. A few weeks ago, Merrill Lynch sold a large package of these financial assets for 22 cents on the dollar. They're worth more than 22 cents. Maybe they're not worth a dollar. Maybe they aren't even worth 75 cents, but maybe they're worth 50 cents. And if you've marked down these assets to 22 cents, if you can just get the price back up to 50 cents, you know, we would be a hell of a lot better off. And I think that's what the administration is trying to do, perhaps incompetently, but trying to do with this bailout proposal is get those prices back up again to break the gridlock and get financial assets flowing again.
Let's go to Jay in Chesapeake, Virginia. Jay, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders and Bruce Bartlett.
Thank you so much. I've been listening to the conversation for a week or so now, and I keep going back to the movie Titanic, where Rose says to that schmuck of a fiancé of hers, "You don't understand. Half the people on this ship are going to drown." And the schmuck says to her, "Not the better half." And that's how I feel here. The better half has never given a rat's patootie about the middle class. They are totally indifferent. The only people that are going to be bailed out are the wealthy. And I'll tell you why. The middle class, like the senator from Vermont has said, is shrinking. Wages are stagnant. Everybody talks about what would happen to America if Wall Street would go under. I would say to you folks, what about what would happen to America if there was no more middle class? Because that's how we feel. There will soon be no more middle class. And how will America get by without the middle class?
Jay, we've got it, Senator Sanders.
Well,
Jay is singing your song.
And Jay is absolutely right. And one of the outrages of the Bush administration is not only their incompetence, it's their dishonesty. I mean, I can tell you, because I sit on these committees, representatives of the Bush administration and Bush himself has ignored the collapse of the middle class. To talk about a vibrant economy a few months ago, that the fundamentals are strong, when over 5 million Americans have slipped into poverty, over 6 million Americans have lost their health insurance, millions of good-paying jobs have left the United States and go to China, and these people, including Mr. Paulson, have the nerve to come before Congress and say, oh, the economy is very good. What were they talking about? Well, as Jay was saying, what they were talking about is that the people on top, their friends, are doing phenomenally well. I mentioned before that since Bush has been president, the top 400 individuals, not a whole lot of people, saw a $670 billion increase in their wealth. Massive transfer of wealth from the middle class to upper-income people. But if I may go back a little bit to what Mr. Bartlett said,
yes.
I think Mr. Bartlett was suggesting a moment ago that maybe part of the problem was, in a sense, that there was too much government interference.
Yes, he was.
I strongly disagree with that. I think what we have seen since Reagan is massive deregulation, and what the argument was that if we just trust the heads of these large financial institutions, if we deregulate their activity, if they can function below the radar screen through hedge funds and other exotic financial mechanisms that no one really fully understands, just trust them, and everything will come out all right. Well, what came out all right is that people like Mr. Paulson got a $38 million bonus. What we know is that in 2007, if you can believe this, Wall Street's five biggest firms, Bear Stearns, et cetera, Goldman Sachs, paid $39 billion in bonuses to themselves. So everything was okay for those guys. So I would say to Mr. Barber, I just don't agree. I don't think the problem is that we have too much regulation. I think we kind of gave over the keys of the bank to these guys. They have done whatever they have wanted, and they have succeeded, so that the top one-tenth of 1% now earns more income than the bottom 50%. That was their goal. They've accomplished it. I think we have to undo the damage. We have to bring government back as an active player protecting the middle class.
Let's take a call from Vermont, Rutland, Vermont. And Jennifer, you're on the air with Senator Sanders and Bruce Bartlett.
Thank you. My feeling is here, if we're going to go back to true capitalism, that's fine for the corporations and businesses, but government has to go back to the people. We got to get the lobbyists away from our Congress. Just get them out of there. And I feel also that just like this election is going, we're not looking at third parties. It's all controlled. Free will here. It's America. And what really bothers me, if we're going to go back to capitalism, we also have to go back to a true government for the people.
Well, Bruce Bartlett, let me go to you there. Jennifer's calling for true capitalism. I'm not sure if Bernie Sanders, I'm not sure that's the flag he would raise exactly. But, you know, is this bailout, is the conversation that's taking place around this crisis, do you believe helping readjust the country in a way that may deal with some of the inequality, that may at the same time provide a healthier economic foundation for this country? Or are we...
Well, look, to those people who are concerned about inequality, such as Senator Sanders, he should be absolutely happy. We've massively increased equality in this country by taking away hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars away from the wealthy over the last couple of weeks, because the stock market is collapsing and they own most of the stock, so they've taken most of the losses. And of course, he wants to defend the middle class. Fine. I'd like to see him go talk to some people who've seen their 401ks and their retirement prospects drop precipitously as the market has dropped. So I think we need to get away from demagoguery here and talk about what we need to do today to stabilize this situation. And if Mr. Sanders' party, his candidate, Barack Obama, gets elected, let them do what they want to do next year. But we cannot allow Congress to adjourn without taking action. I think that is absolutely critical.
I just want to hear from Alabama Senator Richard Shelby, of course, a big Republican on the Senate Banking Committee. He himself not very happy with the picture that's in front of us here, Bruce Bartlett. Here we go.
The Treasury's plan has little for those outside of the financial industry. It is aimed at rescuing the same financial institutions that created this crisis with a sloppy underwriting and reckless disregard for the risk they were creating, taking, or passing on to others.
There we have the ranking Republican on the Senate Banking Committee, Bruce Bartlett. It doesn't sound like it's just Bernie Sanders who's not happy with that picture.
Well, I think the Republicans have gotten religion much too late. They've rubber-stamped everything this administration has wanted to do for the last 8 years. And now, like Claude Rains in Casablanca, they're shocked to discover that the administration's been incompetent. And I think that there's a lot of blame to go around. And let's have a commission to study this situation and issue a report. We had after the stock market crash in 1987. We had Nicholas Brady had a commission, the Brady Commission. So let's have all the recriminations. Let's have all the hearings. Let's discuss this ad infinitum down the road. But we're staring at a deadline that the Congress is going to go out of adjourn for the year, and we've got to act right now because, like I said, I really think 1929 is the alternative, and I don't think anybody wants that.
Let's go to Pat in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Pat, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Huh? I'm generally consider myself a conservative person, and I never thought I would be expressing this viewpoint, but I agree with Senator Sanders a lot more than I agree with your Mr. Bartlett. I think that right now the representatives of this country, as angry as they may seem, are not truly channeling the feelings that a lot of people have right now in terms of where the country is. And I think that Senator Sanders has a better feel for what's actually going on and what people are feeling. And that the danger, I think, is that if the feelings of the people in this country are not channeled correctly and things aren't done, that we could be on a broader level in danger of this country really going in the wrong direction, meaning that, you know, we'll throw the baby out with the bathwater as far as capitalism, that, you know, it raises the possibility that a new form of demagoguery will take place to channel that anger. So I guess, you know, I would urge all of our representatives to really understand what people are thinking and feeling about this situation and to do the right thing, as opposed to what Mr. Bartlett is suggesting, which sounds like, you know, do something now. You know, it's almost like a being robbed. It's, you know, somebody puts a gun to your head and says, you know, give me your wallet or you're dead, which is what effectively I feel like Paulson is saying right now. But
Pat, we're nearly out of time. Senator Sanders, we've just got a minute here. Can you do the right thing in the time that's actually available and avoid a 1929-style meltdown?
Well, I hope we can, but it's certainly not going to be Paulson's position. The idea of giving one person, in this case a fellow who is in the middle of this meltdown as head of Goldman Sachs, $700 billion without any accountability, without any transparency, ain't going to happen, and it should not happen. And I would hope very much that my colleagues will do, as Pat just indicated, and that is kind of stand up for the working families and the middle class who are really struggling right now and tell Wall Street that this bailout is not going to be for them and that the middle class is not going to pay for it.
There is not a lot of time, but the country will be watching very closely. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont joining us today from Washington. Thank you very much, Senator Sanders, for being with us. And Bruce Bartlett in Great Falls, Virginia, author of Wrong on Race and Imposter. Mr. Bartlett, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks to Newt Gingrich earlier and Congressman Barney Frank. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.